Anyways, good morning. And we're going to kick off the contemporary halacha post-Shacharis cheer and breakfast with a discussion of mikvah for men. Halacha, minhag, or neither. What I thought I would discuss with Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur coming up is the background for mikvah on those days, but also touching upon other times that we have the custom, or some people have the custom, to go to the mikvah, and what the background for that will be, and hopefully we'll get a better idea, A, of why we go to the mikvah before Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and why some of us may go even more often than that, and B, some of the halachos that may apply to both of those days. So, to begin, the question is whether or not this might even be absolutely obligatory. The Rambam gives the requisite background information for this, and he tells us, and we'll read the English, all the ritually impure need only wash their hands in order to pray, just like those not in such a state. Even if they are able to immerse themselves in a mikvah and ascend from their impure state, this immersion is not required for prayer. Okay, so first of all, in terms of the Tumah and Tahara that used to exist in those days, all those people were allowed to pray. So if someone was tummy for whatever the reason was, they're still allowed to pray, nothing to worry about. All they need to do is wash their hands. Even if they were able to technically go to a mikvah and become pure again, they don't have to do that before davening. Now, there is extra though. We have already explained that Ezra decreed that only one who had a seminal emission is prohibited from Torah study until he was immersed himself. There was a decree from Ezra who said someone who is what we call Roa Keri had a seminal emission, they shouldn't study Torah until they have gone to the mikvah. The rabbinical court that existed afterwards decreed that this applies even to prayer, i.e., such a person alone should not pray until he immerses himself. These decrees were not put into effect because of questions of ritual purity and impurity. Says Rambam, that's not why this took place, based on the Gemaras, but rather to ensure that the Torah scholars would not overindulge in marital intimacy with their wives. Once we require one to go to the mikvah before davening and before learning, you know, it keeps things in check in terms of how often people are together with their spouses. Apparently there was some sort of issue about that. Therefore, they instituted ritual immersion only for one who has a seminal emission, thereby accepting him from the other ritually impure. Okay, so therefore, says the Rambam, we're not concerned about actual Tumah and Tahara from the olden days, it's only about seeing Keri, and therefore, at the time of this decree, says the Rambam, it was said that even a Zav, okay, a Zav is someone who was already impure from Torah law, potentially, who had a seminal emission, a menstruating woman who emitted semen, and a woman who saw traces of menstrual blood after relations, required immersion to recite the Shema and to pray because of the seminal emission, meaning not because they were Tameh for other reasons from the Torah, but rather it's all about this particular issue. And despite the fact that they remained ritually impure, they weren't actually going to become Tahor by going to the mikvah if they had to wait another X number of days until they became Tahor from the Torah, but it's all about the seminal emission. This is reasonable since this immersion was not a matter of purity, but a result of the decree so that they would not constantly be with their wives. And the final line, which is super important, this decree regarding prayer was also abolished since it was not universally accepted by the Jewish people and the community at large was unable to observe it. Okay, so he gives us the background, saying that there used to be this idea of what is known as Tevilas Ezra, that Ezra established that anybody who has some sort of seminal emission, whether a man or whether a woman following being together with her husband, have some sort of emission like this, then they should go to the mikvah prior to learning Torah and praying. However, again, says the Rambam, this is just simply no longer the case. Number one, it was not universally accepted. Number two, it was what we call a gzeira she'ein atzibor yechola la'amod ba. The community couldn't handle this gzeira, and therefore it was abolished at a later time. Now, nevertheless, we know that there is a custom for some people to go to the mikvah on a daily basis, and what's the background for that? So there was a very nice long article on Chabad.org, unsurprisingly, although it was excellently sourced, I have to say. So if you're looking for any interesting additional reading material, you can see the footnotes there, which I didn't include in my summary, but again, unlike some articles which you see on the internet, this one was impeccably sourced. And here are some of the points that he makes. Number one, he says there exists an opinion that the decree not to pray before immersion remains in effect. Number two...
Well, he's citing Rav Chai Gaon.
Mm-hmm.
So it remains in effect in the year 900.
Yes, and he is. That's why I said he's very clear that the halacha does not follow that opinion. He's not trying to say that that's what we have to do because that's the psak. He's simply saying, just know, not everybody said that immediately following Ezrod was abolished. There was still an opinion that said you needed to have some sort of purity.
Rambam came 200 years after Chaigalan, or I'm not exactly sure of the timeline, but sometime after Chaigalan, and he said it was abolished, so...
Right, I mean, it's not just Rambam, it's every single other posek. And again, what exactly Rav Chaigalan requires, also maybe a longer source of discussion, but anyways. And he makes a very interesting statement that I'm not sure I would agree with, but he does have some sources that seem to say something along these lines. All would agree that it is virtuous to follow this practice and that one's prayer is more accepted following mikvah immersion. Take that as you will. But certainly the point that he's trying to make is there, and that it's definitely not a bad thing. Right? No one's going to say this is a bad thing that you shouldn't be doing. The point, you know, whether or not everyone would say one's prayer is more accepted following mikvah immersion, you know, it is hard to say, especially if you're not dealing with a case where it was even required by Ezra, right? If a person goes to the mikvah, let's say, 2 days in a row, right, because they're going every single morning, and in between last mikvah and this mikvah, they did not have any seminal emission, well then, it's hard for me to assume that there would be something more special about that vis-a-vis, at the very least, this halacha that we saw that was established by Ezra. Nevertheless, again, the point that he's trying to make is heard. He says that Rambam, in a later halacha, notes that it was the custom in some places, and it's actually the halacha immediately following this, which perhaps we should have put on the source sheet, but nevertheless, I didn't want to spend the whole day on the daily mikvah. And he notes that it was the custom in some places, and apparently he wrote in a letter that he was stringent to follow this view whenever he was healthy. He only would ever miss when he was unhealthy. That's when he wouldn't go to the mikvah, but otherwise he would. This next point, I didn't summarize quite as well as I should. Just as priests would immerse before serving in the temple, so should we immerse before we pray, which is equivalent to service of the temple. But that's one of his arguments. It helps one achieve humility by submerging his ego. He brings, again, different sources in, specifically Hasidus, to support this idea that sort of can help bring someone to humility, and that's obviously associated with tefillah. We need to feel very humble when we're standing before God. It brings extra holiness, and therefore the high priest would immerse multiple times on Yom Kippur, which, again, relevant to what we're going to see coming up. And he says it strengthens faith in the ability to understand the mystical parts of Torah. Again, also sourced. I don't know much about this, but apparently going to the mikvah helps you understand these things and strengthens your faith. Okay, so these are some of the reasons why many Hasidim have the custom to go to the mikvah daily. It's a curious mix of what we would call midat chasidut, sort of a matter of piety, and it's also a mix with a minag, because there were some communities that had this minag at different times, and now it's sort of become a minhag in Hasidic communities to go to the mikveh every day, but it's also kind of based on trying to be stringent. So it's like a curious mix in that sense. I don't think anybody would say that for an average person who does not have this custom, it would have sort of any halachic or even minhag binding effects. On the other hand, again, there's still always that midat chasidut element where it might be a good thing to do, for the reasons that were outlined here. And again, if that's something certainly that's meaningful to you and is going to help your davening, then certainly everybody would agree that's a fantastic thing to do. Now, I mean, there may be certain halachic questions about, let's say, going to the mikvah on Shabbos. And, you know, I wouldn't recommend that people just sort of say, oh, you know, this is a good idea for me when you're dealing with questionable cases, but rather, you know, seek rabbinic advice if that's what you so wish to do. Now, mikvah before Shabbos is an interesting one as well. I only brought one source for this because, again, I'd like to focus mainly on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. But there's a Kaf HaChaim which talks about the Shar HaKavanot, which I believe is from Rav Chaim Vital. And he says that he writes in the Shar HaKavanot that the custom of the Arizal, where in source number 3 was, to immerse himself in the mikvah on every Erev Shabbat, on every Friday afternoon, Kanizkar Bizar Parsha Truma, he says, as is mentioned in the Zohar Parsha Truma, page 136b, Derav Hamnuna Saba, Havasalik Minahara Bechal Erev Shabbos. He would come out of the river on every Erev Shabbos, meaning he would have this custom, apparently, to Tovel in the mikvah on every Erev Shabbos, and therefore the Ari would do the same. Vikastav Odsham Besharakavanot, Tzarach Adam Litzvol Base Tefilot, Zoachar Zo. And here we already start counting numbers of Tefilot. Those of you that have been to the mikvah will have heard, you know, various opinions as to how many times you're supposed to dunk. One time, three times, 17 times, 4,000 times. Rabbi Shurkin always used to say, when we were in yeshiva, he said, for all these people that do all the dunks, he says, here's a good trick. He says, it's considered a tefillah if your entire body is submerged. So he says, what you should do is you should take a deep breath, go underwater, and go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. So however many tefillos you want to do, you're just moving your finger in and out of the water. That's going to do it for you, right? You don't have to do bob. Anyways, that was something that he used to say, although I don't think he felt that you should do anything more than one, maybe three tefillos, but I don't remember him ever addressing it. I just remember him making that comment about moving your finger up and down. You need to dunk two tefillot. Varishonahi lahashit bigdei. That should probably say bigdei hachol shel hanefesh, to take off sort of the weekday clothing of the soul. Again, this is some Kabbalistic idea that we're removing what happened in the weekday. That's why we're cleansing ourselves, so to say. And the second one, veti lichvod Shabbat lekabel hatosefet. We're receiving some sort of extra addition to our soul prior to Shabbat, and this is in the honor of Shabbat, and that's what people should have in mind when they're doing their two dunks on Erev Shabbat. And this is a custom that really also has, again, sort of spread to certain communities and almost may take the form of the custom for those communities. Again, this wasn't something that everybody did, that everybody has to do, but certainly Kabbalistically it's considered to be very important. So that's where we get sort of the Shabbos, Erev Shabbos, I should say, mikvah. Then we get to a very interesting one, which I've seen even more people do, which is the mikvah before each of the Shalosh Regalim, Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot. And for this, I mean, we have a nice section from Panini Halacha. There's not really much better you can do than Panini Halacha in summarizing the background and the laws of a particular issue, especially since this is one of the English-translated sections available on the Panini Halacha website. This was, easy choosing for the source material behind this. Says Rabbi Elazar Melamed. Do any of you want to read, by the way? I'm always happy to eat my muffin
while
someone else reads.
All right. During Temple times, there was an additional mitzvah to purify oneself by immersing before the festival, as only those who were pure were permitted to enter the temple courtyard and eat sacrificial meat. However, now that the temple is in ruins, we cannot offer korbanot, nor do we have the red heifer necessary to achieve purification from the impurity of corpses. Thus, the obligation to purify oneself for the festival is null and void. Nevertheless, some maintain that even today one must immerse for the festival. According to the majority of poskim, however, there is no obligation to immerse before the festival nowadays. Those who choose to do so are acting piously. One who finds immersion difficult can fulfill the pious practice with 9 kavim instead. This means he should stand in the shower while 9 kavim, about 11 liters of water, stream down on him uninterruptedly. He should ensure that this water comes into contact with his entire body. So, what if you fill your bathtub with 40 kavim of water? Should be a lot of water, I guess.
40 sa'ah, you mean?
Yeah, 40 sa'ah.
That would be a lot of water.
Well, that's what it means.
I mean, there are all sorts of discussions as to how you can do this. The simple way is simply to have 9 kavim of water poured over oneself. So in the olden days, they would just draw that water and pour it over their heads. But a shower, as we'll discuss, even a short shower will actually fulfill this halacha. And this is actually what's required by a lot of people when it comes to Erev Rosh Hashanah, Erev Yom Kippur. For someone who can't make it to the mikvah, some might even say perhaps it is good enough for someone who might be able to make it to the mikvah, but for some reason doesn't want to or is unable to. But not, strictly speaking, can't. But anyways, and you can see in the footnotes, he brings a lot more sources. Good morning. So after that, so he brings, a whole boatload of sources as to this idea of Rabbi Yitzchak stated a man is obligated to purify himself for the festival. Again, a little bit more in terms of the calculation of how much 9 kavim is there at the end, either 10.8 liters, 12.4 liters, whatever the case is, but that's not very, very much. People always used to say a 10-minute shower. I can't imagine that it's even 10 minutes to get that amount of water on you, and I don't think that that's actually, if you'd ask most post-kavim nowadays, I don't think they'd require a 10-minute shower. I think even shorter would be fine. Again, provided someone's not turning off the shower in the middle, because it's supposed to be an uninterrupted flow of water. Thanks. Now, here we get to the... up until now, although we've started to move perhaps into the realm of halacha, meaning there are at the very least a couple, two, three, four, five poskim that say that there actually is some sort of halachic requirement to go to the mikvah before the Shalosh Regalim, as we saw, the Beit Shmuel obviously being very significant posek, one of the main commentaries on Shulchan Aruch in Evan HaEzer. Nevertheless, we haven't really seen it brought down by really mainstream halachic authorities, like, I don't know, Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah. However, that all changes when we go to Rosh Hashanah. Says the Shulchan Aruch in Arachaim 581:4, Mechabsim u'mistaprim ba'erev Rosh Hashanah, one should wash themselves and get a haircut on Erev Rosh Hashanah. This has to do with the whole idea that, again, we're not worried about our judgment, we're going in almost confidently, and therefore we don't, you know, sit down with our heads down and wear black, and things like that. And notes the Ramah on that, V'yesh nohagin litvol be'erev Rosh Hashanah mishum keri. Some have the custom to immerse themselves on Erev Rosh Hashanah because of keri, and that is sourced in the Kolbo. If you look back at the Darkei Moshe is the commentary on the Tur that was written by Rabbi Moshe Isserles, who is the author of the Ramah, or who is the Ramah. He is the author of really the Mappah, which is the glosses on Shulchan Aruch that he wrote. And there he tends to give you a little bit more of the background information. So if we look there in this case, he quotes you sort of the full discussion. And he writes in source number 6, Katav HaKol Bo Be'er Voshana No'agin Leitanot Volatit Dakot Gdolot V'Litvol Benahar. The Kol Bo writes that we should fast, which many of us do have the custom to fast on Erev Rosh Hashanah, at least for half the day, and to give tzedakah, and to immerse oneself in the river, V'ein Mivarchin Al Tevila Zo. But note, says the Kolbo, that we don't make a brach on this tefillah. One's not going to make a blessing like women would before they would go to the mikvah, which is, of course, required min haTorah. Mumoharam haya noheg lishboch al gufo tet kabin ma'im chamin. And he says that Moharam had the minhag to pour 9 kabin of hot water, which was X amount of, 216 eggfuls. And he would just have this hot water poured over him because it's anyways only about tahara, being pure, but it's not actually a requirement, says the Kolbo, and this is what the Kolbo said. Says the custom is in fact to do this, as Ramah, that's what people do. And again, we see already there's this tension. Some people are toiveling, some people are just saying, you can have enough with the pouring water over you. What is interesting is this comes in the context of washing oneself on Erev Rosh Hashanah, meaning it's sort of coming together. It's not necessarily strictly, you know, about mikvah, but it's also coming in the context of washing, which is something that, again, we say it's not a chova, but it's a nice thing to do to purify oneself before Rosh Hashanah, and therefore people had this minag. And Mishnah Berurah gives a number of different, halachic situations that can arise and what to do in them. He talks about when one should take advantage of the 9 kabin of water sort of heter. He says if someone's unable to, it's too cold, then he can pour the water on him. He says also, when does one go to the mikvah on Erev Rosh Hashanah? He says one should not go to the mikvah before an hour before midday. Okay, so at the end of five halachic hours into the day, meaning at the beginning of the 6th halachic hour of the day, which is, again, approximately 1 hour before chatzot, so somewhere around 12 whatever this year. You can find chatzot and then subtract a little bit, one sha'azmanit, one halachic hour, for those of you who are good at calculating that. And that's, he says, when people should go to the mikvah on Erev Rosh Hashanah. There's more of a background behind this, and he quotes this, the Chayei Adam, as his source. Again, some people will say,
can
wait.
Can you just describe again that those numbers? He said 5 hours into the daytime?
Yes,
or
into the daytime.
Of the day?
Five hours into the daytime. So meaning one,
right now with the spring, we're at the fall equinox, so it's the equal time. So every hour is an hour, basically.
Right.
So now, if the sun rises, let's say 7 o'clock in the morning, because the daylight savings time.
7 o'clock.
So that you're saying by 12, you should be in the mikveh?
No. By 12, you can begin going to the mikvah.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks for clarifying. Now, he also talks about the custom that some people had specifically because they would go to the mikvah. Well, not because, but knowing that they would go to the mikvah before Rosh Hashanah. And we want it to be as pure as possible for Rosh Hashanah. Some people had the custom to avoid being together with their wives on the nights of Rosh Hashanah unless there was some halachic reason to do so. For example, any of the cases in which halacha says one is supposed to be together with their wife, meaning if she was going to the mikvah, that's considered a special mitzvah, and therefore one should be together. But also, you know, perhaps if he was coming back from a trip, other times when the Torah requires that a man be together with his wife, those are enough reason to, yes, be together. Otherwise, he says some people are stringent in this same vein of trying to remain pure for Rosh Hashanah, not to be together. He says, however, people who would eat very much and again, they believed that this would bring to sort of seminal emission. Or if they were having thoughts during the day where they were thinking about women, he says it's probably better that you don't try to be so stringent on yourself and that you just go ahead and be together with your wife as opposed to the possibility of an avira taking place in these cases. And therefore he says, and the Chayadim suggest that the next morning you go to the mikvah again. So this was something very important, that people felt someone should be pure on Rosh Hashanah. That's why this was instituted on Erev Rosh Hashanah, but we see that in some cases even, we have poskim suggesting that people go to the mikvah on Rosh Hashanah itself in order to remain pure for Rosh Hashanah despite what may have happened previously. Now, the truth is, I'm not such a Kabbalist, but nevertheless, I saw something very interesting cited from the Ben Ishchai, so I went and pulled it out of his halachot in Nisavim. He talks about the number of tefillot one should do on Erev Rosh Hashanah and what they should have in mind while they're doing these tefillot. I don't know that people have the custom to do this, but I thought it was very interesting. He says, "V'gam kedei lekavel ha'arak tushat yom tov shel Rosh Hashanah," in source number 8, in order to accept the holiness of the Yom Tov Rosh Hashanah, "l'chayim tovim u'shalom," for a good and peaceful life, "lachein," therefore, says the Ben Ishchai, therefore, "tvila rishona yechavein ba bishvil tahara," the first one you should have in mind to purify yourself, "ushniya yechavein ba l'tikun hakas," the second one to remove all anger, "vashlishit l'matei kadin v'hagbura b'chasadim," the third one should again be sort of to sweeten your judgment, "v'arvi'it lifshot mi'alav v'gdei hachol," as we saw with Erev Shabbos from the Arizal, the fourth one should be to take off these weekday mundane clothing off your neshama. "V'kavin b'zeh gam kein tich leshana v'kilaloteha," that the old year's curses should remain behind, which is something which comes from a Gemara in Megillah. Some of you may have seen the Or Chaim email on Erev Shabbos. I wrote about this concept about this week's Parsha. But he says, during this fourth tefillah, you're sort of putting away the bad. And v'chamishit l'kabela v'arak tushat yom hazikaron v'chavin b'zeh tachel shana uvirchoteha, to begin the new year in a positive way again, to add that holiness that's coming on. And he notes something which somebody was asking me about beforehand, v'gam hanashim yuzihirim litvol be'erev Rosh Hashanah. He brings the opinion, and it makes sense based on all that we're saying up until now, that even women had the custom to go to the mikvah on Erev Rosh Hashanah. Marit Archina was actually just saying that in Allentown they had separate hours. There were some hours for men and some hours for women, because the women also would go to the mikvah. There may be certain other complications with women, especially if they are at a time when they wouldn't otherwise be going to the mikvah. Specifically, if, you know, we want to make sure that no one thinks that they're actually becoming permitted to their husband if a woman's going to the mikvah at a time when she wouldn't be permitted to her husband. There's also some question as to whether or not single girls should be going to the mikvah ever, including this time, but nevertheless, there is this idea that purifying themselves before Rosh Hashanah is a good thing, whether in terms of the Kabbalistic element, whether even for a married woman, if there has been some sort of seminal emission after being together with her husband, these would be things that it seems that a lot of people would say is very positive for them as well. So even in a shir about mikvah for men, women have this rule as well, potentially. Now that's all for mikvah before Rosh Hashanah. Again, it seems to be a very nice idea. It's tied in very strongly to this idea of purification from Keri, as we saw. That's really the source of it, which goes way back to this original Takanat Ezra, which we're trying to at least fulfill at the beginning of the new year, to go into Rosh Hashanah sort of clean from whatever, you know, impurities we may have. On the other hand, mikvah before Yom Kippur is really potentially a strong halacha. And what do I mean by that? Let's take a look even at some of the discussion in the Torah, okay, the precursor to the Shulchan Aruch. The Torah writes as following, V'nagu litvol b'Erev Yom Kippur. People have the custom to go to the mikvah on Erev Yom Kippur. V'amar Rav Amram. Rav Amram Gon writes, Tovel Adam b'sha'a zayin u'mitvalel mincha. He said the person, people would go to the mikvah in the seventh hour of the day and daven mincha. V'amar Rav Sadja, and Rav Sadja Gon wrote, listen to this. Ba'aliyato militvol, in source number 9, the first line, when this person would finish the tefillah, mivarech al hatefillah. This was so accepted that Rav Sadja Gaon even says you make a bracha when you come out. Wow. V'katav Adoni Avi HaRash, however, the Torah quotes his father, the Rosh, says, v'ein tvar avnir and bazeh, he doesn't accept this. Shalom atzinu betalmud remez letefillah zo. He says, we don't find this anywhere in the Gemara. I mean, how can you go and make a brach on something that we don't even see in the Gemara altogether? Ve'ena lo yesod nevi'im v'lo minhag nevi'im. It's not even a custom of the nevi'im. V'lo adifa me'arav adam rechavit chavit v'lo barech. He says, when it comes to banging the arava, even though that was something that was very old origins, nevertheless, even there we don't make a bracha. How could we possibly make a bracha on this going to the mikvah when the Gemara doesn't mention it? It's certainly no better than that. And notes the Torah, V'imi shum d'Rabbi Yitzchak d'amar chayiv adam l'tahar atzma b'regel, which we mentioned earlier, that a person is supposed to purify themselves before the regel. Haynu l'tahar atzma mikol atumot ve'af mitumat meitu azot alav gimov zayin ve'idna'el natu'ar. And he says basically what we saw earlier, to say that that's in terms of actual ritual purity and the para aduma and things like that. But that's not referring to going to the mikvah. And he says basically, v'kevan, okay, we're on the third to last line. Few words from the end. Since she'en ba'alei kriyan tovlin kol hashana, since people who have seen keri do not go to the mikvah the rest of the year, ein chovah letvila zo, there's no obligation to do this, ve'en levarech, and one should not make a blessing when they come out of the mikvah. Ela she'nagu ha'olam letahar atzma mikeri b'yom ha'kippurim. He says people had the custom to do this, and they put it based, it's relying upon the Medrash in Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, which he cited previously, Shenikiim kimalachei hasharei b'yom ha'kippurim, that we try to be as clean as the angels on Erev Yom Kippur. I see we're running a little bit short on time here. We've got a little bit of a late start, and I don't want to go past 9, so we'll summarize a bit of what we see in the future. The Darkei Moshe, again, the precursor to what's going on in Shulchan Aruch here, where the Ramah comments on the tefillah. He tells us that the reason is, again, for carry. And therefore, he says you only need to just dunk in the mikvah once, and that's what Maharivil writes. However, he says there are those people who have the custom to dunk 3 times and to say vidui in the mikvah. He says that is minhag shtushu. He says that's a ridiculous, it's a foolish minhag. And he says it's just simply, you don't need to dunk 3 times, and to say vidui in the mikvah is just, he says, bizarre. There is more of a discussion on this. For those who are interested, you can find it online. I can try to find the source. A long discussion, and I think it was in Yalkut Yosef that I saw it, where he talks about this idea of doing vidui in the mikvah, but that's not something that people do. And again, the possibility of these 9 kabin working. And he brings up the last thing. He says that some people say that pouring the 9 kabin does not work. Why? Mishum dehave kiger hamitgayer v'tzarich tvila. That the reason for this Yom Kippur is not just about carry, but also the possibility that we're trying to start anew. We're going to the mikvah just like a ger goes to the mikvah. They're now considered reborn. They're joining the Jewish people. They have a clean slate. So too before Yom Kippur, relating to the tshuva that we're doing, we also want to go to the mikvah for that reason. And if that's the case, he says, the 9 kabin is out of the question. That's only relating to carry. However, it's a possibility that that's the reason for the tefillah. However, the Ramah does not actually paskin that way. The Ramah paskins it's 1 time, it's because of keri. There's all sorts of different discussions. This is really brought out very nicely by Shulchan Aruch HaRav in source number 12. We have some quick halachot here in the last minute or two from Halachopedia in terms of the different sources. I used to think this was just a bit of a joke, this Halachopedia, until last year somebody told me that it's actually reviewed behind the scenes by one of the YU Rosh Yeshiva. So that's a pretty good source for halacha, if that is indeed the case. I haven't confirmed that, but the person said at the very least they know when it started that was the case. When one should go to the mikvah, the fact that the shaliach tzibur should make an extra effort to fulfill this minhag speaks to what the discussion we were having right beforehand. Even if it's going to be bitul Torah, one should go to the mikvah. Lots of nice things, lots of good footnotes with sources. The idea of not showering following the mikvah, which is the last point in the text that I brought here, Women traditionally wouldn't do that so as not to show or think that it was actually the showering afterwards that would make someone pure and not the actual going to the mikvah. Some poskim say that, you know, one doesn't have to, a man doesn't have to be concerned about that. They are indeed allowed to shower after going to the mikvah. I've still heard that, you know, it's considered not so nice to go to the to go shower right after you come out of the mikvah, like showering off the mikvah quickly, quickly. Let's get rid of the mikvah purity. On the other hand, some of the mikvahs, I do understand those sentiments. One last interesting possibility is that there are some poskim who talk about ascending to Har HaBayit, and in their view, it's quite possible that the mikvah before that would be something you would make a blessing on, but again, that is not normative halacha as far as I'm aware. Maybe the topic for another contemporary halacha shir, and thanks for coming out.
Sure.